Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at UH1.com.
Welcome, everybody, to Beyond Surviving, a safe space for survivors of childhood sexual abuse to receive support, resources, and share their stories. Beyond Surviving is about freedom, healing, connection, and even laughter and fun. And most importantly, it's about letting go of the pain of abuse and finally moving on. So for those of you who don't know me or are joining for the first time tonight, I'm Rachel Grant, and I have been a sexual abuse recovery coach since 2007, and I'm also the author of Beyond Surviving, The Final Stage of Recovery from Sexual Abuse. I work with survivors who are sick and tired of feeling broken and unfixable, and I help them let go of the pain of the past and move on with their lives. You can learn more about me and the Beyond Surviving program at www.rachelgrantcoaching.com. So I'm really excited to have all of you here tonight with me and to join in this conversation with my special guest, Woody Hagen, who is the founder of Wounded Child Coaching. And he's going to be sharing with us much about the wounded child's journey and how we can go from the victim mindset to one of self-love. And so before we get started with that, I want to just tell you a little bit more about Woody. He really founded his coaching practice to help others who have experienced child abuse, as he did. And his recovery from that damage, you know, took some time, you know, decades. And he really found that the psychological counseling and other conventional means didn't really help him. And that's mostly because their focus was on the damage and the deficiencies and placing blame. So his greatest breakthroughs really came from the coaching process, which saw him as sufficient and the past as a teacher. And coaching has really helped Woody release those things in his life that no longer serve him and embrace those things that keep him growing. And Woody now shares this wisdom with others through the same coaching process that has revolutionized his life. And he received his coaching training through the Institute for Professional Excellence in Coaching and is a certified professional coach and an Energy Leadership Index Master Practitioner, which sounds amazing. I can't wait to learn more about what that is. And, you know, I was really excited to meet Woody and find Woody because we have this same experience of kind of going through the trenches of therapy and psychological assessment and all these things and just finding that it was not giving us what we needed. And so we had that in common starting out and then, you know, our passion for helping survivors. So when I met him and had the chance to get to know him a bit more and what he's doing, I just knew, like, I had to bring him on and have you guys hear from him and learn from him. So, Woody, welcome. Thank you so much for being here.
Well, thank you, Rachel, and thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate
Yeah.
being invited onto your show.
Absolutely. So to get us started, what I'd love to hear about is, you know, you've come up with this, you know, way of talking about healing as the wounded child's journey. And can you tell us more about that, like what that really means and what that looks like?
When we start, I look at it as the healing process is that we all start at the beginning in this place of helplessness and hopelessness where we're victims. And as abuse survivors, all of us have been in that place of just utter helplessness when we're at the mercy of our abusers. And what I've done is I've sort of had this image of a landscape, and I see that the journey to healing is walking through this landscape. So I envision this image of, in the foreground, standing in quicksand while looking out at a barren landscape with an iron gate, and on the other side, this rugged terrain, and then a bridge going over a river, and on the other side of the river, this, you know, lush mountains and green fields. And I see that I saw each part of that landscape sort of coincided with the different parts of the, you know, different levels of thought, different ways of thinking that we have and that we have to go through, almost as a linear process to get to the other side of that bridge.
Right.
So, you know, we start off as victims, and we're, you know, all of us are behind this gate, and this gate is the beliefs that we have that we can't heal. That we have these beliefs about ourselves that our abusers taught us, that they told us that we're unworthy. They told us that we're unlovable. They told us that they were useless, worthless, and we buy into those beliefs because we didn't know any better. If our parents or whoever it was that abused us taught us this, how could it be otherwise? And so one of the biggest steps of healing is uncovering what those false beliefs are that we have about ourselves. And so I see that gate as, it's actually an unlocked gate, but we refuse to go through because we believe it's locked.
So absolutely.
I'm sorry, I missed that.
Oh, I just said, yeah, I agree. I agree with that, yeah.
And so once we really understand, separate the false beliefs from what's true about ourselves, and we step out, we're now have this, now we're in the life that we're in as a result of what our past was, the circumstances that we find ourselves in. You know, so, you know, we may be faced with relationships that don't work out for us. We may have a lot of challenges in, you know, out in the world. So we have first the conflict with our circumstances, then the conflict with other people, and finally the realization that all conflict is really an inner conflict. And coming to grips with the inner conflict, that's, and taking responsibility for our healing is a toll that we pay to get onto the bridge in that image. And then the bridge is going from first victim thinking to conflicted thinking and finally to reconciliatory thinking, where we learn how to reconcile really with, ultimately with ourselves, and let go of the past so that we can come to a place on the other end of the bridge of loving ourselves, because all healing really stems from self-love.
Love that. Okay, so there's this process that you're describing for us, and this resonates with me quite a bit. What I love about it was you know, when I get to work with my colleagues who are kind of working in the same realm, how we kind of are finding our ways to some of the same answers and describing it differently, but it's all like in the same camp, which gets me really excited because that means like we're on to something, right? And this is something that I talk about when I talk about the three stages of recovery. And you're similarly saying, like, look, folks, like you're going through a process, right? You're starting at a certain point and you're looking to get to another place. And all along the way, there are kind of these obstacles that get put in the way. And we have to find a system and a process for getting around them. And I love that one of the very first things to notice is, well, shoot, that door isn't even locked, right? I get to step out of that space of hopelessness into what's next as soon as I am ready. And, you know, so one thing that I'm curious about, Woody, as you were thinking about, like, as you were coming into this image, you know, and struck by this image and how that really helped you think about and formulate this idea of how we move along this journey where, you know, this destination of self-love that I think is great. You know, how did you apply that to your own experience? You know, can you tell us a little bit about what you went through and how this way of thinking about it helped you get to that place of self-love?
Oh, okay. I mean, I guess to start off with, you know, I was abused as a child, that, you know, every way that I could have been abused. And, you know, my main abuser was my father. And I went through, I'm actually in my third marriage, but I, repeated the relationships of my childhood. You know, I married my father, you know, in my first marriage. Mm-hmm. And, mm-hmm. You know, her personality was very much like my father's. And she sort of drove home how worthless I was. And I believed that I was married to her for 13 years. Mm. My second marriage, out of the frying pan into the fire, it was even worse. And so it really wasn't until, you know, my life really didn't start changing until after my second marriage, where I started realizing, I had to do a lot of introspection. And I was still bouncing around. It wasn't really until in my third marriage, where I married somebody who believed in me more than I believed in myself, who encouraged me, and we both had a common goal of, we both, you know, to both of us, one of our core values is growth, inner growth mm-hmm. and healing. This sort of led, you know, I had a meandering past, but where the real change has happened is starting probably around 5 years ago, 5-6 years ago. A lot of it had to do with realizations about myself, being honest with myself, realizing that I wanted to know the truth about what happened to me. You know, I have many suppressed memories, and I just started on this journey of first knowing the truth. I didn't want to just feel like the world. I didn't like being in this place where I felt like the world was in control and, you know, I was just the effect of whatever was happening around me. I wanted to be in control of my life. And to do that, I had to really be honest with myself about what my contribution to what my circumstances were. I had to take responsibility for my own life. And in doing, you know, just came to a lot of insights, and it really was once I started on my coach training that, and the whole idea of these levels of thought. I mean, my image is actually a description of what, you know, the school I went to talks about core energy, and the you know, seven levels of energy. I sort of, this image is sort of based on that, and this whole idea of the different levels of thought. I just saw it as, instead of this, I saw it as a linear process of having to go through from the lowest level to the highest level. And I'm sort of looking back at my healing and how I grew,
mm-hmm.
is really once I saw that I had, you know, sort of looking back and seeing that that I had grown past so much of what I grew up with, I mapped out what I had gone through. And that really is the basis of the wounded child's journey.
Right.
You know, that I saw how these choices I made, these, saw the lies I bought into. I mean, I'll give you an example of one of the lies I bought into. Growing up, I was told that I was tone deaf. And my father, this is in the early 60s, when color TVs finally were affordable enough, he said to me and my sisters, "What do you want, a color TV or a piano?" And I wanted the color TV. My older sister wanted the color TV. My younger sister said the piano. He bought both. But because I wanted the color TV, I was never allowed to touch the piano.
And oh, goodness.
I would get paddled for touching the piano. And I begged for music lessons. No, you can't, because your tone, you wanted the color TV and besides, you're tone deaf. And I would sneak in there and I would improvise, but I thought I was cheating. I thought I was faking it. I taught myself how to play, but I thought it wasn't real because I was tone deaf.
Right.
Another thing was that I was incapable in math. I was incapable in school and whatever. 2005, I graduated from Rutgers University with a 4.0 grade point average.
Nice.
At age 49. So, all of these lies that I grew up with about myself that were with me for well into my 40s, I started to debunk.
Yeah,
and
And
I realized that what is, from the people I speak to, the people, from my clients, we all, and from what I see on my Facebook page, all of us wounded children have these set of lies about ourselves, these false beliefs that we've bought into that keep us trapped and keep us behind that gate.
It's so true. Yeah, one of the things that I'm being reminded of as you're sharing your story, Woody, and by the way, thank you just for giving us a look into kind of what your life has been like and some of the struggles that you've kind of faced and dealt with. As I think about, the experience of abuse, what I've discovered and what I've found over and over again is that the experience itself sucks, but what really ends up harming us at the end of the day and destroying our lives and holding us back and keeping us in this cycle that we get into over and over, year after year after year, is all exactly what you're saying, all the lies that we come to believe as a result of the abuse. Everything that we, sorry guys, everything that we come to like distrust about ourselves or about others, and that so much of the healing journey, exactly as you say, is about stripping away those lies and seeing them, recognizing them for the falsehoods that they are, and then reconnecting, right, with that, who we really want to be. And I love what you said about how your wife, you know, saw in you more than you could see in yourself. I just read this quote today that I loved that was, to love a person is to see all of their magic and to remind them of it when they have forgotten. And I think all of us need, isn't that great? Oh my gosh. And I think all of us, you know, particularly as wounded kids, as you say, you know, we need people like that because we have a very hard time seeing our magic, right? And so I love this and that you've had people in your life who've spurred you on and pushed you to get out of that process. And, you know, you very particularly speak about self-love and that, you know, for you, this is the destination and that this is what you love to support your clients in, you know, being able to get to is this place of self-love. So, you know, talk to us a little bit about why that's so important. You know, why is that the end game in your mind?
Until, you know, I'm, you know, one of the great, you know, I'm not really a religious person, but, you know, there's the golden rule, treat others as you'd, you know, be treated. But there's even a deeper one that says, love your neighbor as you love yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, in thinking about that, I realized that it's not even, you know, you cannot love your neighbor if you don't love yourself.
Mm.
So loving yourself becomes the linchpin for all love. So if you can't love yourself, then what kind of love do you bring into a relationship? How are you loving the other person if you don't love yourself? So I think that and just about everybody, you know, all wounded children come from this place of self-loathing. They've been taught to not love themselves, that, you know, that they're not worthy of love.
Right.
And when you're not worthy of love, then how do you love somebody else? What do you love them with? How do you love somebody more than you love yourself? And what is the nature of the love that you're loving them with? So self-love really becomes the, you know, the core of, you know, if we're ever going to be able to love another person, the love has to first start with ourselves. But instead what we do is, you know, think of self-love. Think of yourself as a glass. And you fill this glass. What you're filling this glass with is self-love. And imagine, like, you know, how a coffee maker has a little thing on the side of it, that tube, that measures how much, what the level is inside the coffee maker. Well, that imagine that tube on the side that measures, that's your self-esteem. So whatever level your self-esteem is a really good indication of how much you love yourself. And if we could get ourselves to a point where we're loving ourselves, where we have enough self-love that it's overflowing, then we could give of ourselves and give of our love from that overflow. Instead, what we do is we dole out whatever little self-esteem we have and we pour it into other people who don't reciprocate, and they drain us dry. And we go into the cycle of relationships where, you know, we have these people that just, you know, we love because it's in our nature. We want to give love. We hunger for love so much that we give love so freely. And we end up finding people that are very willing to take from us, and they drain us dry. Yeah. And when we're drained dry, they discard us and go find somebody else. And then we go through years of just building up our self-esteem again and repeat the cycle.
Right.
But if we have self-love and we truly love ourselves, one, we're not going to attract into our lives people that take from us, take our essence away. They're going to pour into the cup instead of taking away from it.
Right.
And self-love really is, it's crucial for ourselves and for our relationships and for every aspect of our lives.
Absolutely. Yeah, my cup runneth over. I love that analogy and that imagery of that, because so it's so true that we kind of end up falling into these patterns in our relationships when it comes to love, either exactly as you're talking about, oh my goodness, like I'm just going to have to, the only way for me to have people in my life is if I give them everything, and I have to constantly be taking care of them, and I have to put my own needs and everything aside, and it has to always be the outpouring. And you're right, when you have like a very low account, it's, you know, you're going to be diminished and exhausted really quickly. And I think the other side of that, which I'm sure you speak to as well, is that the other piece that we get into is, well, I'm going to find somebody who's going to fill my cup, right? But not in a good
way.
Not in a, like, I'm going to, like, oh, if I, you know, they'll do this, and I'm constantly looking outside of yourself, and, well, if I have that relationship, or if I have that job, or if I get this thing, you know, then I'll finally feel good enough, then I'll finally feel worthy. And man, that's a losing game, right? So what I really am tuning into and really what really resonates with me as well that you're sharing with us is that at the end of the day, we do become responsible for things. And we do become responsible for our lives. And we have to take back that ownership. And it's a process to get there, to get to that point where you're ready for it and can do it. But part of stepping out of the wounded place, and, you know, as you talk about, you know, from this place of being, you know, a victim, and instead are in this place where you are the author of your life, you know, part of that is about becoming responsible for your worth and your love. And then anything else that anybody else adds is just like bonus. But it's not like the end all be all. Is that kind of what you're saying?
Oh, absolutely. Self-responsibility is if you cannot take responsibility for your life and for your healing, you cannot heal. Because no one's going to do it for you.
Right. Right.
You know, and...
one of the questions that comes to mind, no, that was really powerful, and that's exactly right. And it's also going back and remembering, you know, being in that place where being so scared and so hopeless and can I do this? And maybe you try things and they don't work and it seems like nothing you do makes any difference. So like you're trying to be responsible, you're trying to do something and it just doesn't seem to be working. You know, what are you noticing in your work are some of the things that people really bump up against when it comes to starting that journey? Like how do you, the gate is there and yes, the gate is unlocked, but what are you finding has to kind of be the, like, what's the secret sauce that can help people step through that gate? You know, because it's really just their fears and all these lies and things that are holding them back from that. So, you know, is there anything that you would say if there's somebody who's listening tonight who's like, yeah, I get it, and I have to take this journey and I need to do these things, but I don't care if that gate's open. It still feels like it's a bazillion miles high and I just don't have what it takes to get to the other side and to walk through and start this process.
That's a really, really good question. I talk a lot about how we cannot go by what we feel. You know, so once our feel, you know, if we wait to feel like healing, if we wait to feel like now it's time, we'll be waiting for the rest of our life. We
Holy
can't
shit, you're exactly
wait
right.
For it.
Yes.
You know, we have to want it. We have to have a decide It's a do or die. I am going to go for that green land on the other side of that bridge. I don't care what it takes. I don't care how hard it is. I am going to do it. I don't care how long it takes. And that's, you know, that's the other thing. A lot of times people want the quick fix. They, you know, they want to be able to, okay, get from here to there without everything in between. And it, it just doesn't work that way. You know, it's
that's
like
true.
When you plant the seed in the ground, you can't keep on digging up the ground to see whether the seed is growing. You have to wait until it breaks the surface. And every seed has its own period. You know, some seeds may sprout in a week. Some seeds may take 2 months. And you just have to, you have to water it and wait. You have to do the work and wait. You have to persist. You know, you cannot give up. And, well, I think a lot of times people give up because of what they feel.
Yeah,
your feelings are always
right, too.
Going to, your feelings are always going to be opposite of what it is that you're striving for. That feeling that you want, that you, you know, that you hope that one day have, you're not going to have it while you're getting there.
Right. Well said. Yeah, you know, and this is something that I certainly, you know, I work with a lot of my clients around in the beginning, because it's like, okay, we've got to, you know, have the door cracked enough on the believing that change is possible. But at the end of the day, you're going to be scared and you're going to be doubtful and you're going to have all these thoughts and all these feelings because why? Well, you've been practicing for many, many, many years, you know, these thoughts and these beliefs. And which, you know, so a lot of times when I'm working with a client initially and they're thinking, well, I need to go think about this. I go, okay, just remember you're going to be thinking with the same brain that got you, that's been doing the thinking for the last 20 years. It's like, and feeling with the same emotions that have been feeling for the last 20 years. It's like, it's not that we want to distrust ourselves and our intuitions, but at some point we've just got to say, all right, you know what? Whatever, shut up, I'm going and I'm going to do it and I'm going to see what happens. And I think you make a really brilliant point that sometimes the healing, it sometimes hurts more than it feels good at the beginning, because you're finally letting yourself, you know, talk about things and notice things that you've been spending most of your life running from. But that doesn't mean you aren't getting better. And it does take that persistence to get there. You know, one of my clients today said, well, what I'm most proud of today is that I haven't run away. You know, I haven't quit, because I've done that over and over and over again.
That is huge. That's so huge.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, I like to tell my clients, you know, that it takes more energy to move a train from a standing position to its first micron than it does for it to run for a mile at full speed.
Yeah.
That in the very, very beginning, the amount of resistance that you're going to have to start moving, it, you know, that's why starting is the most courageous thing you could do. It's the hardest thing you could do. It's, you know, and, you know, that journey of healing doesn't, you know, doesn't happen unless you start. So the starting is really the, you know, great cause for celebration. You may not feel anything. You don't see the results yet, but you've started.
Yeah, that's right. And I know that, Woody, one of the things that we have in common as well is a real love of how the body and the brain are all integrated into what we're talking about, right? How the nervous system and the neurological in neurology kind of comes in and informs this journey, right? Because exactly what we're saying, if you take it down to the neurological level now, is the brain has become wired for particular thoughts or particular responses. And so when you try to step into something, when you try to step through that gate, the brain and the nervous system really goes, wait a minute, I don't know what you're doing here. That doesn't compute with anything that we have on file. So never mind, sit down. So
absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. So how do you integrate the nervous system into the work that you do? What have you discovered about that you love and that has made a difference in how you kind of support survivors in their healing?
Well, I sort of like, you know, with my diet, you know, with my image, that barren land is, you know, is really controlled by our sympathetic nervous system, the fight or flight part of our nervous system.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we've been programmed that, you know, as wounded children, our sympathetic nervous system is always on. We were hypervigilant as children, and that hypervigilance has followed us throughout our entire lives. You know, we're always waiting for the other shoe to drop. We're always on guard against the next heartbreak, against this, whatever. Something good is going on in our lives, we're waiting for the bad to happen because it always has. So we're always on this high alert for disaster. And so we're under stress because when our sympathetic nervous system is turned on, we're pumping stress hormones into our bloodstreams. And which is why so many wounded children, so many survivors of abuse have autoimmune diseases. You know, our bodies attacking our bodies because we are always pumping these stress hormones into our bodies. On the flip side, on the other side of that bridge, is the parasympathetic nervous system, which handles resting and digesting. You know, that's the part of our nervous system that gives us the endorphins, the feel-good hormones. And so, the goal is when, you know, once we get to that place of self-love, we're also going to be feeling a lot better over there. The reason why we don't feel good over here is because we still are pumping those stress hormones into our bloodstreams. So our feelings are so tied into our nervous system, you know, which is why we don't, I don't feel it because, well, what you feel is what your nervous system is doing.
That's right. Yeah, you know, this is really, I love this piece because what we have to understand is that, you know, abuse impacts us on, you know, multiple levels, right? And when we have a system that's become dysregulated, out of balance as a result of trauma and abuse, our journey is one of reaching this place of self-love. And then another way of saying that is we now have a regulated system, like all systems go. Everything is working again as it should. Yeah.
Oh,
what's really fascinating.
That's beautiful. Yeah, I like that.
And yeah, feel free to take it. I give you permission. And so what's really fascinating is as we're going through that journey, you know, everything in our body and our brain tries to fight it, right? And I think this is part of why you and I love the coaching modality so much, is because we get to really get in there in the trenches and go, wait a minute. We're not going to sit here and just chatter and talk about how you're feeling freaked out. I get it. But now here's what you can do about that, right? And really getting in there and giving skills and tools and systems that people can take and begin applying, you know, so that they can come out of that state and move into those things that they really want to be able to do and feel. Yeah.
Absolutely.
It's really cool.
I mean, when I was going to psychologists or social workers or whatever, you know, the focus was always on the damage. The focus was always on what was done to me, the abuser, the abuse. And that, that kept me there. All you talk about is what happened to you. You're never able to talk about what you want to become.
Right.
And I love the coaching process.
Oh, go ahead.
I love the coaching process because it's Oh, it takes you from where you are right now and doesn't look at you as being deficient. And
yes,
it doesn't look
right.
at you as needing to be fixed. It just looks at you, well, you're doing things and thinking things that are counterproductive. What can we change? How can we look at it differently mm-hmm. so that what you're doing mm-hmm. works for you?
Right.
So it's very empowering. The coaching process is very empowering, where I always found therapy to be disempowering.
Yeah. And I think, you know, I think for me what I've come where I've landed on the on it all is that that therapy I think can serve a very important role for a very particular part of the process.
Mm-hmm.
But at a certain, namely being able to finally just talk about and acknowledge, and you're not really trying necessarily to shift a lot, but you want to have a place, a safe space where you can go and connect and be human and be real about what you've gone through. What I try to get across to my clients and folks is that at some point, however, which is similar to what you're saying, that the talking about it and the revisiting it, the rehearsing it really at some point actually starts to do more harm than good on a neurological basis, because you're continuing to reinforce those beliefs if you're not starting to get the skills and tools for how to shift them.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And I think that is why, you know, both you and I are kind of talking about, look, there is a process and there is a journey. Please don't get stuck at any one step,
mm-hmm.
except self-love and happiness.
Right,
get
right.
stuck there.
I mean,
you know, if you're going to get stuck anywhere, get stuck there.
I mean, you just brought to mind, you know, I talk about I am statements. You know,
mm-hmm.
you know, we have that inner critic that's always speaking those I am statements to us. I am
yeah.
unworthy. I am incapable. And one of the things that, you know, one of the dangers that, you know, we get with always looking back is that we then become, our I am statement becomes whatever our symptoms
yeah.
are. You know, I am
yeah.
PTSD. I am this. I am that. And the labels that are used, we identify with those labels. And
right.
they become
right.
something that we're, that, you know, that, you know, that we're stuck back there. And,
exactly. That's right.
You know, for me, one of the things in that, you know, my image of the bridge is to get to the other side. You know, just imagine all these things that are, you know, like the labels, the I am statements. These are all things, like, they all have a string that we're holding on to. You know, and they're
mm-hmm.
anchoring us to this side. And to get to the other side at some point, we got to let go of those strings.
Mm-hmm. I love that. That's so good. Yeah, really beautifully said. And I think, you know, really what, you know, the bottom line, I think, of what you're sharing is that wherever you are in your journey, wherever you are in your process, it's okay. Like, that's where you are. Recognize where you are, tune into that, and then get the support and the care that you need in order to take that next step. And I know one of the ways that people can do that is certainly by working with you or listening to some of the great things that you have created and put together. So I want to take a minute here to just tell you all how you can find out more about Woody's work and get connected with him. You can email Woody at whaiken@woundedchildcoaching.com. You can certainly go to his website, woundedchildcoaching.com, or on Facebook, which is facebook.com/woundedchild. And definitely go check out his website where you can get the first video of his program, The Wounded Child's Journey, so you can kind of build on what you've been learning and what you've been hearing today and kind of see a little bit more, you know, Woody in action, so to speak. Anything you want to add to that, Woody?
It's Facebook is Wounded Child Coaching.
My apologies. Gotcha.
On my Facebook page, right in the banner, there's a button where it says, click here for the free video. And that video is actually the first part of this wounded child's journey that I've been speaking about. And it goes into the image in great detail, what the different steps are, and really gives a very good overview of that whole process.
Mm-hmm.
So I really would encourage people to, click that button on the Facebook page and see the video.
Right, right. Good call. What I love about all of this at the end of the day is that this is, we all have to start in this place of overcoming our fear and overcoming our hiccups and the constraints and the obstacles. And at the end of the day, we have to really notice what's at stake if we don't overcome those obstacles. And the beautiful thing about it is that there are people here and available to support you and to guide you and to help you on that journey. So I really encourage you guys to go and connect with Woody, learn more about what he's doing. You can certainly always visit me at rachelgrantcoaching.com to find more resources. So until then, please take very good care of you and yours. And Woody, thank you so very much for being here tonight. It's been a really great pleasure.
And thank you. It's been wonderful.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.